It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Podcasts of the shows can be found there under those recaps. Just click on the recap and all kinds of great information comes up, including the podcast. The show is rebroadcast on KLZ 560 from 10 to 11 p.m. every Monday through Friday night. So you can always listen to it again there. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. There's all kinds of great information. We roll out typically our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast at that time, as well as our op-eds. Yesterday we had Lyle Laverty on to talk about our forests, and we can make our forests much more healthy. And that was picked up in Complete Colorado, so you can go to my website and take a look at that as well. So happy Tuesday. Producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Not too bad for a person in my stature or my situation. Let's not get into too much detail here.
Okay. Well, always love to say thank you to you. It's important that we be grateful for all these good things that we have going on in our lives. And I get to work with a really amazing team, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people at Crawford Broadcasting. And to each of you listeners, thank you. You each are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Be industrious and productive today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And let's jump into our inspiration. The show is a great show today, and it'll take our mind off of all this craziness, and in a way it'll show how things are so connected to our founding.
Hear, hear. Please.
So we'll be
take our minds off of what's currently going on.
Well, or maybe it's going to be that we've been here before, which is really interesting. So Ben Martin, you know him. He's a former Army Ranger, a patriotic historian, and we're doing this series. This is brought to you by the Harris family. We're very grateful to them for doing this. It's the important speeches and documents of the American founding. And today we'll be talking about James Otis, Samuel Adams, and Patrick Henry. So you won't want to miss it. It is going to be fascinating. And in the first segment, we'll chat with Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors, just to keep us informed on what is happening in the business arena, the small to mid-sized businesses. Chris is in the business of helping people buy and sell their dreams, and we'll talk with him just briefly in this first segment.
You better go back, and I'm just thinking of all the ears that perked up when you said, we're talking about Sam Adams?
Not only was he a brewer, but he was a very eloquent and fiery speaker as well.
Let's put his occupation aside here for a second.
Yeah, that's one of those products that has sure lasted a long time, though, Steve. You know it. So a couple of things. When we look at these things, Rudyard Kipling said, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And so I want to ask just a how question. When I got up this morning, there was a tweet from one of the Channel 9 news anchors, and he said there's two pictures. There's one out at Cherry Creek, a beach at Cherry Creek Reservoir, before law enforcement showed up, and there's one with after. So the first one, there's all kinds of people having a great time, and the other one, the beach is totally empty. But my question to you, Steve, is, how did law enforcement, or how did Channel 9 know that law enforcement was going to show up and do that? Do we really think that they had a camera set up all day that day just to see what was going to happen? Or do you think they were tipped off?
They were tipped off. I mean, anybody who looks at, and I just searched for it, Kyle Clark, I'm sorry, I gave away his name, Kyle Clark Twitter, and you can see this picture, it's the before and after, and there is no way they were not tipped off.
Yeah, so this whole thing is being politicized, and we just saw that Colorado, we had Colorado Representative Mark Baisley on yesterday, that Colorado has been cooking the books on the numbers. on the COVID death numbers. And once what happened is Colorado Representative Mark Baisley reached out to DA George Brockler to have him look into this. And this is another thing. Why? The minute that George Brockler indicated he was going to look into this cooking the books on the COVID-19 death numbers, then Jared Polis got out in front of it, and they immediately, almost immediately, they dropped the numbers by 30%. So, again, let's put our thinking caps on here. How is it that once they were called on the carpet, they immediately had another set of books that they said, oh, this is now the correct number? I mean, there was hardly any time to do any kind of an investigation. So, again, this looks like this is very fishy. And from a strategic standpoint, Polis politically was very smart. He went out very quickly and owned it and said that, made it look like he was the one that they had, that had determined that there was some discrepancies in the numbers and that he was correcting it. So, my friends, we need to be digging a little deeper on this when you're having conversations with friends that are lauding the fact that Governor Polis changed those numbers. You say, why? How did he do that so quickly unless there was two sets of books? And we need to give credit where credit is due. And that goes to Colorado Representative Mark Baisley for bringing this forward. Your thoughts, Steve?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking, you quote Kipling, you know, the Kipling quote every morning now. And here's a great illustration about, well, you know, a listener hears that. Well, how do I do that? Well, you just went right through it. The what, the why, the when, how, where, and who. There it is.
And, you know, I say this every morning just because, and I hope it doesn't get boring, but I think it's really a good thing to be thinking about every morning. So if you guys all get bored with it, just let me know. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. We've also seen that force will use fear so that they can come in behind and use force. I mean, a perfect example is that beach at Cherry Creek. The fear is that the PBIs are trying to put in is this whole COVID-19. And I think that, yes, it is, you know, it is out there. I mean, there certainly is this coronavirus. However, they've been cooking the books, and they have not been honest about most all of the people that have died from COVID-19 have actually had underlying conditions. So, again, let's ask all these questions. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. You know, we're getting a dry run on the Green New Deal, and I don't think people like it that much. Let's go ahead and jump in here. Our quote for today is James Otis, who Ben Martin and I will be talking about him in this second, third, and fourth segments. He was a lawyer, a political activist, a pamphleteer and legislator in Boston, a member of the Massachusetts Provincial Assembly, and an early advocate of the patriot views against British policy, which led to the American Revolution. His well-known catchphrase, taxation without representation is tyranny, became the basic patriot position. He was born in 1725. He died in 1783 at the age of 58. And this is what he said, I will to my dying day oppose with all the powers and faculties God has given me all such instruments of slavery on the one hand and villainy on the other, as this writ of assistance is. And we'll be talking about the writs of assistance here in just a moment. So let's go ahead and jump over here to Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors. Chris, happy Tuesday.
Good morning, Kim. And I loved your comment about two sets of books. I've never seen that in small business.
Only in government, right?
Oh, yeah, only in government. No, I'm just kidding. There would be no such thing. But no, good morning. And yeah, I'd like to share today a little bit about what I have going on, just to let people know that things are still happening out in the marketplace. And as always, when we list a business for sale, it's done confidentially. So we take some extra steps in there to make sure that it's unknown that your particular business is for sale. It's recommended not to let your customers or employees know that your business is for sale. You don't want any disruptions to the business when you're trying to make that transition. So we try to keep things under the wraps. And then in terms of some current deals that I'm working on, I've got an acquisition that's happening. A $40 million drywall business is looking at acquiring a $3.5 million drywall business that was founded, I think, 25 or 30 years ago now. So an acquisition in the construction industry is about to happen. And then I've got a neighborhood bar tavern that opened, I believe, in the late 80s, and the current ownership family is looking to sell, and there's a new buyer that's been in the industry and is looking at this as an opportunity to get in there and do some rebranding and a little bit of remodeling before they can reopen. And when they do reopen and we can fully let everybody back into those bars and taverns again, it's going to be a good time. So that buyer is excited about getting in there and doing some different branding and reopening a neighborhood bar tavern. And then I've got a
Go ahead. That's exciting. Oh,
yes, indeed. Last, I've got a buyer that's actively looking. He's pre-qualified with the SBA. He's actively looking to purchase a staffing and recruitment business. So there's buyers in the market as well. And talking about the SBA and what's going on there, one of the biggest benefits in the CARES Act for buying a business right now is the SBA is going to make your first 6 months payments for you. If you purchase a business via an SBA-backed loan before September 27th of this year. So they're going to buy, they're going to pay your first 6 months. So you're going to take all that money that you're not paying to them and put it into your working capital. So there are a lot more buyers coming to the market right now with that kind of benefit in buying a business. And they're looking to make acquisitions.
Okay, and so what is that date again, Chris? You have to buy a business
September
before when?
September 27th. Yeah, so if you purchase a business with an SBA-backed loan before September 27th, right now the SBA is making your first 6 months payments for you. It's not deferred. They're not putting it on the back end. They're making the payments for you.
How long does it typically take to get a deal done? Because in some ways, September 27th sounds a ways out there, and in other ways, it looks like it's tomorrow. So how long does it typically take to get a deal done?
Yeah, so from the time you fill out an application with one of the SBA banks, and I know plenty of the great bankers here in the Denver community that do these and do them regularly that we trust and know and get them done. And typically, from the time you make the application, it takes about 8 weeks, and we haven't seen any big delays in SBA processing right now. I got that other deal done a couple weeks ago, and about 8 weeks is what it takes. So by the time you find a business, negotiate a deal, get your application in with the SBA, and then ride that process out, you could be 8 to 10 weeks out. So if you're thinking about making that acquisition, now's the time to be actively looking.
Okay, and can you pre-qualify for this SBA loan and then look for business, or do you have to find the business and go through that process? How does that work, Chris?
Yeah, great question. And there's really two sides to that. So when we take a business to market, many times I'll reach out to the SBA bankers that we know and trust and have them pre-qualify the business for an SBA loan. So they'll look at the financials and say, yeah, if somebody buys this business at this price, we'll do the financing on it. And then I've got buyers out there in the market that talk with bankers first, share their financial information with those bankers, and the bankers will say, hey, here's the range of a deal that we'll get you into. If you can put this down, this is the size of business you can buy. So, yes, we can pre-qualify a business, and we can pre-qualify a buyer. We match them up, and we get a deal done.
Okay, with this disruption, there may be a bunch of people that may be looking to, their companies may be downsizing, and so this may be an excellent time to maybe, you know, use some severance pay that they might be receiving to buy a business. I mean, this seemed like this is a big opportunity. And I would highly recommend that people reach out to you, Chris, and just see what opportunity looks like.
Yeah, and the tavern, the bar tavern that I was just talking about, we're doing some seller financing there. So the buyer is bringing some money down. The seller is going to finance the back end of it. So you don't just have to go SBA route to get a business done, to buy a business. You could buy a business for, you know, gosh, we've sold businesses for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 that are still cash flowing. They just need someone to get behind it, bump it up, do a little bit of marketing, be creative, and grow that thing. So there's lots of opportunities out there. It's really good for business buyers right now, and then it's going to be good for business sellers as well. We're going to see a lot of activity.
That is so exciting. How can people reach you, Chris Cantwell?
You can reach me on my website at cccellsbiz.biz. That's B-I-Z, cccellsbiz.biz. Or find all my contact information on kimmunson.com.
You got it. You have a whole landing page. Chris Cantwell, thank you so much. That's great news. So thank you.
Have a great day, Kim.
Okay, you too. And before we go to break, speaking of bars, restaurants, and taverns, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners, and they are offering curbside service. They're accepting to-go orders, and their hours are Sunday through Wednesday, 11:30 to 8:30, and Thursday through Saturday, 11:30 through 9. Go to order.hooters.com to place your order. You can drop by and pick it up curbside. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can find all the podcasts, recaps of the show, all kinds of great information. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. All kinds of important things in there to keep you informed. This is one of my most favorite shows of the month. And this is our show that's brought to you by the Harris family. It's Ben Martin. You know him. He's a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger. And this series is Important Speeches and Documents of America's Founding, of the American Founding. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Kim. I'm so happy to be here today. A great day.
It is a great day. So let's jump in here. You've got three founders, James Otis, Samuel Adams, and Patrick Henry, and we'll be talking about some of the things that they said and they wrote. So let's take it from there, Ben Martin.
Okay, well, let's get going here. Today's presentation focuses on the time between the French and Indian War, which was 1754 to 1763. That was the time of the French-Indian War, and the start of the American Revolution, which was in 1775 through 1783. The time in between here is generally called the pre-Revolutionary War time and covers the years, like I said, in the early 1760s through up to 1775. And amazingly, Kim, that is the name of today's presentation. How about that?
That works out really well.
Today, it seems that while some Americans might be slightly familiar with this period, most Americans may have lost what they learned about it back in high school. But it was a critical time. This year's first three presentations, as you said earlier, focused on our first three presentations this year focused on the father of our country, George Washington, and covered the time period from the beginning of the American Revolutionary War to his death at the end of the 18th century. So from 1775, basically, to 1799. Those presentations described important events of our American founding heritage, including the fighting and the winning of the Revolutionary War and some key battles. Some crises faced and overcome, the unprecedented and astounding relinquishment of power by General and President George Washington, the framing and ratification of a singularly unique constitution, which became the foundation of self-government in the world, the forming and functioning of a government based upon the prescriptions of the Constitution, and the timeless and universal principles of the Declaration of Independence. In today's presentation, though, we are going to drop back in time a little and discuss some of the speeches and documents and people that created the impetus that started our founders on the path to a truly Revolutionary War and the creation of a truly revolutionary government of, by, and for the people, often called the Novus Ordo Seclorum, or the New Order of the Ages. In this presentation, as you said, we will discuss the roles and examine them of the three founders, two of whom you probably heard, and one maybe not. These three are James Otis Jr., Samuel Adams, and Patrick Henry. Now, the first two, James Otis and Samuel Adams, that's what he liked to be called, lived in the Massachusetts colony. And the third, Patrick Henry, was from Virginia. Granted, there are other founders we could discuss who played critical roles, but these three are key and somewhat familiar. And they represent two areas of the colonial America which are considered hot spots of the Revolution. Now, before the French and Indian War, the British attitude towards its American colonies was often described as benign neglect. Everything was rolling along in a favorable manner for the British. The American colonies provided them with raw materials for British manufacturing, and in return purchased British manufactured goods. What was not to like? So the British generally left the American colonists to their own devices. But as we know from history, peaceful coexistence rarely lasts long. Other European countries were also interested in the good deal Britain had in North America and started making inroads into the North American continent and encroaching upon and challenging British interest. A critical area was in the vicinity of today's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and on 28 May 1754, important date, a small military unit from Virginia arrived there, sent by Governor Robert Dinwiddie of Virginia. I'm not making that word up. to warn the French to leave this area because it belonged to Britain. I know it's hard to believe, but the French soldiers were not very receptive to that message, and the two units clashed in a battle. It was called the Battle of Jumonville Glen. There was the beginning of the French and Indian War. And a side note to that, the 22-year-old officer in charge of the troops from Virginia was none other than our own George Washington. Now, wars are very costly human endeavors, and this one lasted until 1763. And although the major fighting ended with the French surrender at Montreal on 8 September 1760, the treasury and the military of the victorious British, they were severely depleted. Needing to quickly replenish both, the British examined all possibilities and decided that their American colonists should contribute a lion's share of the needed revenues. In order to do this, the British government started laying new taxes upon their American colonies. The tranquil period of benign neglect was coming to an end. Now, wow. We turn to our hero here, James Otis. And he is sometimes called the founding father of the Fourth Amendment. And we know the Fourth Amendment has to do with searches. And it's a pretty hot topic today here. So the
to that point, Ben, the Fourth Amendment right now, what we're seeing with different legislation, in fact, the Ventura County, California health official was on a YouTube video, which I have looked and authenticated it, saying that they may actually go into people's homes and take people out of their homes regarding this COVID-19 disruption reaction.
Maybe,
and that is directly an affront on the Fourth Amendment. So you can see how it's so timeless what our Constitution is, because we're having the same thing here. So continue on, Ben Martin.
So this is the origin of that. It's called the Writs of Assistance. In the years that followed, the British imposed taxes on necessities that the colonists considered parts of everyday life, things like tea and molasses and paper products and more. And many of us have heard of these taxes and restrictions that I'm about to list by their more common names, such as the Proclamation of 1763, the Sugar Act, the Stamp Act, the Declaratory Act, the Townshend Acts, the Tea Acts, and the infamous Intolerable Acts. Now, these are really important things that were happening back then, and doing the same things to the colonists that these encroachments are doing to us today here. An older and a first onerous item in this long train of abuses and usurpations, and those words come from our Declaration of Independence, was named the Writs of Assistance, which dated back to the 17th century. The latest version was dated 1755, though. And when King George III ascended to the British throne in 1760, right in the middle of all this, they decided to issue a new one, which was common, and it was more restrictive, which empowered the British Customs House officers that were in the colonies to search any house, any ship, any business, and any barn or any other item for smuggled goods. And, get this, Kim, neither the building nor the goods needed to be specified. As could be imagined, this writ raised much concern and opposition among American colonists in Massachusetts and Boston. And like I said, it sounds a lot like what's happening today.
Absolutely, it does. Ben Martin, let's, on this note, we're going to go to break and continue on because it is so relevant of what is happening today. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, is on the line. It was a big day in the market yesterday, Jason McBride.
That's right, Kim. You must have invested, 1% of your net worth and drove the Dow up almost 1,000 points. I mean, that's just too much buying pressure.
It is. It truly is too much buying pressure. So the market, you know, typically is looking into the future. It seems to think that we're going to have some good news down the road here.
Well, I think the market expects us to return to normal, and I think the market realizes that we're adaptable and that things will come back eventually, that this virus is not the end of the world. It's not the bubonic plague. I think the market is looking down the road. But, you know, you can kind of see right now where it's assigning the strength, and that's more towards technology, stocks in that type of area that, you know, maybe you're not affected. You know, if we see a little bit of a reduction in brick and mortar, you see companies that let their employees work from home, you know, permanently, like Twitter has announced they will, or at least more often. That, you know, does involve more technology, and that's probably why the NASDAQ has been leading the charge, Kim. But I'll tell you, yesterday, the Dow and the small caps were the biggest percentage gainers, so they kind of got mad and said, hey, don't forget us, we're going to catch up.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. So with all this disruption going on, though, we've talked about this, that sometimes the portfolio balance has gotten out of whack. And so it's a good time to kind of take your temperature, sit down with you and your colleagues over at Presidential just to get those, you know, check those percentages out and make sure people get them into something that they're comfortable with.
Well, and that's a good idea, Kim. You know, you don't necessarily have to make a change if you're only out of balance by a little bit. You don't want to rebalance too often, at least in my opinion. You know, you might look and see which one of your holdings is acting stronger. And again, it's always your choice. Some people like to say, well, this one is a bigger winner. Let's let it run. I don't want to rebalance it right now. Let's give it some more time. While others like to kind of get back to that, you know, that pie chart percentage they're comfortable with. That's one of the great things about working with one of our advisors, Kim. Believe it or not, they do realize it's your money and it's your decision and your choice what to do. We're just kind of the coach. You're the owner of the team.
I love that. And if people want to sit down and talk with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management, that phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or we have that great landing page together, Jason, that is airpresidential.com.
That's correct, Kim.
Okay, well, you have a great day. We're going to continue on. I know you're a big fan of Ben Martin, so we're going to go to break and continue on because these conversations regarding these speeches and documents of the American founding are so relevant to today. So this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Hey, welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Let's jump in here. I have on the line with me Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian, also a former Army Ranger. And I love this show. We are doing this once a month. This is Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding. And we'll be talking about James Otis, Samuel Adams, and Patrick Henry. So, Ben Martin, continue on. We were talking about the writs of assistance.
Okay, well, thank you, Kim. And we set, in the first part of the program here, we set the scene. It was a time between the French and Indian War and the Revolutionary War, so from about 1760 to 1775, and we were talking about the British needing money and starting to tax the American colonists. And they first, one of these onerous acts that the British government imposed upon us, and we call it in the long line of abuses and usurpations from our Declaration of Independence, was these things called the writs of assistance, which gave the British officials authority to go anywhere they wanted to and search for anything they wanted to without any specificity. And so that makes the scene set now, and we can turn to our hero, as you said, James Otis Jr., whom many, even American historians, don't really understand or know very well. And so, Jay, let's talk a little bit about him in the first part of this period. He began as a British loyalist and a Tory, and he was the son of the Speaker of the Massachusetts House of Representatives, and he graduated from Harvard in 1743. After graduation, he initially practiced law under the apprenticeship of Jeremiah Gridley, a well-known lawyer with Whig sympathies. And when I talk Whig sympathies, I'm talking about people that were for the American colonies rather than the British. So the British were called Tories, those sympathizers there, and the sympathizers for the American colonies were called Whigs, later called Patriots. So he came from a background that wasn't that. It was a background. His father was a strong Tory, and a lot of his associates were too. And so Otis rose to great distinction as a lawyer in Boston under the guidance of Jeremiah Gridley. And when the embittered Massachusetts colonists began to question the legality of the writs of assistance, their superior court consented to hear their arguments. Otis held the office of Advocate General at the time, and that, so that's a British official, and it was his duty to defend the government's position for the writs of assistance. Well, our hero Otis refused and resigned his office and defended pro bono the people against the issue of the writs of assistance. And Gridley, his former mentor, appeared on the opposite side for the government. This case was argued in the Old Town House of Boston in February of 1776, and the chief argument made for the people was by Otis, pro bono, as I said before. It was in this hearing and in this argument that James Otis switched from a Tory to a patriot. Now, John Adams, who would later be known as the Atlas of Independence and the second president of the United States, was there to listen to James Otis, who had such a great reputation even at this early period in his life. He described Otis's performance in the following manner. He said he argued against the writs of assistance in a nearly five-hour oration before a select audience in the State House in February of 1761. Otis was a flame of fire with a promptitude of classic allusions, a depth of research, a rapid summary of historical events and dates, a profusion of legal authorities. Adams claimed further that the child of independence was then and there born, every man of an immense crowded audience appeared to me to go away as I did, ready to take arms against the writs of assistance. Otis's argument failed to win the case, but it was galvanized the revolutionary movement. The citizens of Boston, impressed with this oratory, elected him to the Massachusetts House of Representatives soon after. There, he led patriot efforts to challenge the succession of British laws and taxes, gaining more fame with every outspoken defense of the colonists' freedoms. He was often been given credit for coining such iconic phrases from the American founding heritage as taxation without representation is tyranny, and a man's home is his castle. And he has been called, as I said before, the founding father of the Fourth Amendment. He likely did not coin these phrases. Nevertheless, Otis deserves credit for advancing the idea behind the phrase. John Adams promoted Otis as a major player in the coming revolution. Adams said, "I solemnly say I have never known a man whose love of country was more ardent or sincere, never one who suffered so much, never one whose services for any 10 years of his life were so important and essential to the cause of his country than those of Mr. Otis from 1760 to 1770. So that's our first hero, and we'll hear more about him in the coming segments, but you know, welcome and to the introduction of Mr. James Otis Jr.
Wow, and it is so relevant to what's going on today. There's so much. I'd love to jump in here and give color commentary on this, but let's make sure that we get through as much material as we can. We've got about 4 minutes in this segment, so where do you want to take us on this, Ben Martin?
Well, I want to introduce our next man, Samuel Adams. Now, I study this a lot. I've studied Samuel Adams, but let me tell you, I did a lot more here. There's so much. We're going to just try to hit the highlights here of Samuel Adams, because he is a very important founding father, and he is called the founding father of the American Revolution. And most people know him. But and I do too, but I didn't know him. I don't know him as well as I know him now. Samuel Adams was a father, a founding father of the United States, a statesman, a political philosopher. He was one of Boston's and America's most prominent revolutionary leaders. his role in developing the origins of and the uniting of the American colonies in the fight for independence during the American Revolutionary War must not ever be understated. As a political philosopher and theorist and British citizen at the time, as all of us were, that lived in the American colonies, he often protested British taxation without representation, referencing the Magna Carta of 1215, which effectively ended arbitrary taxation of barons in England. He also cited the teachings of John Locke in the political ideas about being born with certain unalienable rights, liberty, and independence that led to the writing of the Declaration of Independence. As a statesman, he wrote to influence his fellow American colonists, as well as British officials in both America and Great Britain, to overturn many of the unconstitutional parliamentary acts and their associated taxes. As a prominent leader, he was known for his ability to harness popular resentment against parliamentary authority. He organized within Massachusetts and the other colonies groups such as the Sons of Liberty, with John Hancock, Paul Revere, and James Otis, again, our first hero, and the Committees of Correspondence and the Committees of Safety, to take effective action against British officials and the consequences of their mandates. Now, do we want to break here, Kim, or?
Yeah, if this is a good spot to break, let's do that. This is a great show. It's Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding. Ben Martin is taking us through this. You know him. He is a former Army Ranger, a patriotic historian. The show is brought to you by the Harris family. So grateful to them for this. Let's go to break, and we'll continue on with Ben Martin.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
A recent study finds that COVID-19 economic disruption could force half of small businesses to close within 6 months. Local small business owner Jen Hewlin, Waters Edge Winery, who pledged her home for the loan to start her business, chose to fully open her business last week. As a reasonable individual, she had agreed to a pause in her business until we could better understand COVID-19. The curve has been flattened. There are enough respirators. Effective treatments are available. But the bureaucrats at Tri-County Health said no and shut her down. Jen is fighting for her economic life. Help her with legal costs and operating expenses. Go to KimMunson.com for the link to help Jen through her crowdfunding campaign.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
How come all the pretty girls like
hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's KimMunson.com. MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Just a quick note. We were talking about Samuel Adams with Ben Martin before we went to break. There's another current hero out there, and that is Jen Hewlin with Water's Edge Winery. She has been on the cutting edge of working to get these businesses open. She opened up her business, and we are doing a crowdfunding for her. You can go to my website and sign up, and we've raised a little over $5,000 for Jen to help her with legal costs as well as operating expenses as we're going through this, and she's a real hero. So I find there's a correlation between Jen Hewlin and Samuel Adams. So Ben Martin, let's continue on. This is going way too quickly, so we want to make sure
and there's so much get through here, this. Kim, but thank you. So let's give a little bit of background about Adams, and then we'll move on and talk about what he did. And we could talk for many, many programs about that. He contributed so much, and he did so much for our founding. But he was born in 22 February of 1722 in Boston to an affluent Puritan family, which was religiously and politically active. His father, Samuel Adams, was a deacon, a merchant, a successful merchant, a brewer, and a political activist. His mother, Mary, was the daughter of a local merchant, too. Adams was proud of his Puritan heritage, and he emphasized Puritan values and virtues in his political career, especially the virtue part. He graduated from Harvard, again, in 1740, but he was unsuccessful in his business and as a tax collector before he finally started concentrating solely on politics. And the famous historian, American historian, Pauline Meyer, who most people have heard of and read, said of Adams, "He always remained a man utterly uninterested in either making or possessing money." That kind of describes him completely. He was focused on his role in becoming the father of the American Revolution. He married his pastor's daughter in 1749. She had several children, but only two of them lived past the childhood. And his father, Deacon Adams, was a great man in his own right. And in the 1730s in Boston, they experienced a severe economic recession. And Deacon Adams and some of his friends said, you know, we have got to do something for the people here. So they started what was called the Land Bank. And this was what I think ignited the distrust of the British government and his son, Sam Adams. So they did this land bank, and they said, if you will give us collateral of your land, we will issue you paper money, and you can use this paper money in our colony to buy goods. Well, this helped them because the British loyalists said, no, you can only pay with silver and gold, hard currency. And they didn't have that. You know, they were farmers. Many of them were very poor. And so everything was working out good. And the colonists who were merchants there could now, their businesses were going back up too. So it helped both sides of the equation. And this was going really well, but the people that were in charge, the British officials, didn't like this at all because it was giving these common people access that they didn't like to see them have. It's sort of like some of the things that are happening here today. Mm-hmm. And so they wrote back to the king and the parliament and said, let's stop this stuff. Let's make this illegal. So they did. They made it illegal, and they said, all of you people that have done this land bank are now responsible for all of those loans. And you have to pay it back, not in paper money, but you have to pay it back in solid currency, gold and silver. So this sent the Adams family into bankruptcy. But his father was, like I said, a good businessman, not like his son. And he fought really hard to regain his economic footing. But it still cost them a lot, he never forgot that. Samuel Adams never forgot that. So naturally, he gravitated towards the popular party, he meaning Samuel Adams, which was led by someone we just discussed, James Otis Jr., who we know was a fiery orator and had personal grievances against many of the members of the aristocratic court party. Otis guided Adams in his young political career and helped him develop the rhetoric and methods of political resistance, which would be influential in the rise of the Sons of Liberty. In the early 1760s, soon after the British victory in the French and Indian War, Samuel Adams emerged as an important public figure in Boston. By 1765, Adams was ready to take the lead. And then he was faced with all of these political usurpations, these acts that were imposed upon the colonists by these British officials. The first one was the Sugar Act. And I'm just going to go through them today, and I'm not going to discuss them, but I just want you to see. And then the Stamp Act of 1765. The Sugar Act was in 1764. The Stamp Act was in 1765. The Declaratory Act was in 1766. The Townsend Acts were in 1765. The Massachusetts Circular of Letter of 1768 was done by Adams and Otis. And then the Boston Massacre occurred in 1770. And it was a result of all of these other acts that, in the reactions that these were had. And then they had a quiet period. And the quiet period was after that. You know, everybody kind of settled down a little bit after the Boston Massacre. But in April of 1770, as a result of the massacre, Parliament repealed the Townsend Acts Terrace. And each one of these acts, because of the actions, well, the British acts, because of the actions of Samuel Adams and James Otis, they were overturned or put into the back corner and never had the full effect upon the American people. And that's when he was really started with the committees of correspondence to protest all these acts. Adams and his colleagues devised this system in November of 1772. The towns of Massachusetts would consult with each other concerning political matters via messages through a network of committees that recorded British activities and protested imperial policies. The committees of correspondence soon formed in other colonies as well, based upon the model that Samuel Adams and James Otis has presented to everybody and showed to be so successful. And then the Boston Tea Party came, and the Boston Tea Party really kind of upped the ante, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to... What's that?
Well, that's for sure. That really upped the ante.
Well, so go ahead.
Well, quick question. What about Samuel Adams as a brewer? You said he wasn't much of a businessman.
Well, Samuel Adams was never really a brewer. He was a malter. Now, his father had a brewery and a malting area. Sam Adams, like I said, you know, he was given money by his father and everything like that to go into business, and he lost all the money. He finally gave him sole ownership of the malting shop, and he destroyed that too. So, you know, he just wasn't one of those guys.
That wasn't his strength, huh?
That wasn't it. You know, he was a politician and he was an organizer. So after, as a result of all that happened during the Boston Tea Party, the British came up with this new set of regulations, which they called the Coercive Acts of 1774. The Americans call it the Intolerable Acts of 1774. And again, I'm not going to describe that here because of time, but they were pretty onerous. And that led to the founding or the start of the First Continental Congress. And again, Adams was he was profound in leading to that and organizing the people that way. And so his trip to Philadelphia in 1774 was his first time that Samuel Adams had been outside of a colony of Massachusetts. And just I'm just going to try to name a few things in the Continental Congress that he did that was just amazing. He endorsed the Suffolk Resolves, which were delivered to the First Continental Congress by Paul Revere. It was a declaration of rights that denied Parliament the right to legislate the colonies. He also organized a colonial boycott against the Continental Association. He served in the Massachusetts Provisional Congress, an extra legal legislative body independent of British control. He created the first Minuteman companies. He was the moderator of the British town meetings, which was a very important role. He was selected to attend the Second Continental Congress, and he and John Hancock were to go to the Second Continental Congress, but these two men decided that this famous night in April of 1775, that it was not safe to return to Boston before leaving for Philadelphia. So they stayed at Hancock's childhood home in Lexington, home. 14 April 1775, General Gage, the British military commander that was the military forces that were occupying Boston, received a letter from Lord Dartmouth and from London advising him to arrest the principal factors, actors, and abettors in the provincial Congress. And, of course, that was Samuel Adams and John Hancock. On the night of 18 April, Gage sent out a detachment of soldiers for that fateful mission that sparked the American Revolutionary War. So there's something there that you may not have known about the battles of Lexington and Concord. From Boston,
yeah.
Joseph Warren established Paul Revere to warn the two that the British troops were on the move that night and they were there to arrest them.
Well, and with that, Ben Martin, we are out of time, unfortunately, and we're going to have to do Patrick Henry next month. This has gone so quickly. So, Ben Martin, fascinating. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoy it, Kim, because this is a great part of American history and the Revolutionary War. Thank you very much. I enjoyed being with you today.
Well, thank you, and thank you to the Harris family. Our quote for today is James Otis. He said, "Everyone with this writ may be a tyrant in a legal manner. Also may control, imprison, or murder anyone within the realm." So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.